The Pope's got a new encyclical, and we've got Tim Staples next on Focus. Hello and welcome to Focus, the Catholic Answers podcast for living, understanding, and defending your Catholic faith. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and the Pope has a new encyclical out, Fratelli Tutti, an encyclical about being brothers and sisters to one another. Of course, there's controversy around it. There's controversy around virtually everything Pope Francis says and does. Is this one anti-American? Is it anti-right wing? Is it pro-socialist? These critiques have been made, and we'll get into those. But also, we'll try to dig out some of the treasures in this new encyclical from Pope Francis. Tim Staples, always a great one for finding those treasures and helping us to understand them. Remember to subscribe to Focus wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher. That way, you'll be notified when new episodes come out. And if you wouldn't mind, please give us that 5-star review to help grow this podcast. That makes you a brother or sister to us, and that's what the Pope is asking, that we all be brothers and sisters to one another. Let's find out what else the Pope had to say with Tim Staples. Tim, I know you have many, many things you want to say about Fratelli Tutti, but yes. I want to propose to you a theory of the document and see if you're sympathetic to this at all. It strikes me that it's very well possible that this document could, in the long term, be a great success in its vision of the church and of the world. But in the short term, it's a bit of a failure. And my concern that it's about it being a failure in the short term is this, that it's going to need translators and interpreters. It's addressed to the people of the world, but it's not written to the people of the world. It's written to intellectuals or something. So, because it's 38,000 words, eight chapters. And
it is.
And it's a lot. It's a lot to process. And I don't really see like a lot of, you know, people just sitting around at home going, hey, family, gather around. Let's see what the Pope says about being brothers and sisters to one another.
Yeah, I think that is the major weakness. And I think you hit it right on the head. That's what I thought. I read it. I absolutely love it. I devoured it. Mm-hmm. It is so rich. There is so much to it. As I think I scared you when I came in with all my notes here. I mean, we could spend weeks on this encyclical. But you know what? You take it for what it is. Our Holy Father wrote it to the world. But as is usually the case, papal documents in the last, you know, other than the great Pope St. Paul VI, so Humani Vitae, as you said, 7,000 words that rocked the world, literally. And I also think his Mysterium Fidei, though longer than that, is also a absolutely brilliant encyclical, 1965. But John Paul, Benedict, long.
Yeah.
You know, long encyclicals and such. And so I think, as is the case with papal documents in general, they are generally meant to be broken down by the bishops and by priests and by you and I.
Yeah.
You know, we need to defend the teachings of the church. And so there is a huge role for us as lay people to take these documents and break them down, teach them to our families as well as, hey, on Catholic Answers Live or Catholic Answers Focus.
But you wouldn't begrudge me saying, I struggled because I thought, please, it's too wordy. It's just too many words.
Yeah, it is. But okay, you know, beyond
so
that,
let's get into
let's
the
get
document.
To the meat.
Okay, yeah, because there's a lot of meat in there.
It's brilliant.
Well, in the course of our conversation, I'll give you what I think are some of the complaints that people have out there. But I want you to give us the general. First of all, what is it? Okay, so is there a call to action? Is there what is the Pope doing? What's he proposing here? What's the meat? What is the meat of this thing?
I think the document is for such a time as this. If you've ever read an encyclical that was written for such a time as this, this is it. He is responding to the chaos going on in the world today. There is division rooted, whether it's in fundamentalist forms of religion, like we see with Islam around the world, persecuting Christians in particular right now to a degree we've hardly seen in history. You know, he deals with that. divisions caused by fundamental. He doesn't get into naming the specifics, but you know, you can if you have a brain that's working, and if you've read the paper here, you know what's going on here. Divisions rooted in a politics of division that has also reached proportions, Cy, you and I have never seen in our 56 years. You're 56. I'm 50. No, are you?
I'm 56. Yeah,
but you're going to be 57 pretty soon.
Well, I'm 14 days older than you.
You always act like, well, but you're pretty old though.
That's right. But the point is, he is writing to the world and exhorting all of us to understand a fundamental Christian belief and a fundamental reality rooted in biology as well. We are all brothers and sisters.
Yeah, right.
We are, as St. Paul says famously, quoting a pagan philosopher in Acts 17, 28 and 29, we are all the offspring of God. So what he's doing is he's starting at the foundation. He brings in natural law beautifully. And in multiple situations, he hammers the relativism of our age that is destructive, bringing in natural law and the moral absolute that binds every human. Oh, it reminded me. I tell you, at times, it's like I'm reading John Paul. You know,
he
quotes John Paul quite a bit. But that idea, my mind went to John Paul's Evangelium Vitae, paragraph 71 to 73, where he talks about how the moral law is binding on every human being, nations, and so forth. Pope Francis, you know, piggybacks on that, brings out this profound truth that there is a moral law and absolute truth that binds all of humanity and to which we are all subservient, right? So on a natural level, beautifully, brilliantly, he's trying to tackle, and this was ambitious, Cy, because trying to tackle so many issues in one document. It is astonishing from the political divisions, you know, even brings up the wall and just mentions walls. And for some of my friends that have said, oh, this is an anti-Trump thing. Oh, my goodness. I don't even think they've read it. This is anything but an anti-America or anti-Donald Trump letter. He is really, I believe, if I could misuse the term, he's in the genre of the prophet. And even on a natural level, he's calling everyone to repentance. He's calling everyone to beware of your, not just the other guy's ideology, but yours.
Yeah, that's the hard part. I think that's actually part of why he has so many enemies is he's speaking, because we do. We are naturally subject to ideologies, and he keeps tweaking you and poking you and saying, knock it off.
I love it because iron sharpens iron. But think of this. Now, I believe in building the wall on our southern border, right? Yeah. I believe that is the politically responsible thing to do in view of the sex trafficking going on, the drugs pouring over the border. To me, it's a no-brainer. And what's sad is it's become this political issue when we know that just a few years ago, everybody on the Democrat side was in favor of building 700 miles of wall.
Yeah.
And now it's the most evil thing in the world to build 500 miles. Okay, all the political nonsense aside, we need security at the border. That's a no-brainer. But I appreciate that Pope Francis is challenging me to my core and saying, okay, well, consider your Christian faith, Tim Staples, and understand. And this is what I think he's challenging us to see. There are real human beings on the other side of that wall. And be careful, because what can happen, and we've seen this in our own political discourse. You know, I love our president, Donald Trump. But when I hear him say, you know, we're only going to allow people through the door. Now, we're going to build a wall, but it'll have a nice door, but we're only going to... A big, beautiful door, but we're only going to allow those who can contribute to our society.
Yeah.
They've got to be technologically knowledgeable.
no.
That's right. And the Pope absolutely says no to that kind of thinking about human beings.
Absolutely.
That's instrumental thinking about human beings rather than Christian thinking about human beings.
Absolutely. But what's beautiful about this letter is he challenges someone like me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he also challenges the leftists, liberals, calls them out by name that ultimately are disguising their presentations as some sort of, intolerance and so forth, to basically they're reducing everything to their individualistic wants and needs.
And he calls them colonizers. I think I'm not sure if he used the word, but he challenges those people who are like, sure, you want to help those who are, say, in, I don't know, the third world, what's called the third world, right?
Yes.
But you impose all these things, these colonizing ideas on them. And he's really protective of local communities in this letter. Extremely protective of them.
He really is. And this is, again, the genre of the prophet, because he's calling, he's calling everybody to repent and to wake up. He goes after the false individualism, but then he goes after the false universalism. So the false universalism, like you can insert communism, socialism, and such, that wants to make us all the same, right? And for the state, he hammers that in the strongest of terms. Again, in the name of the importance of the individual dignity, we're not a throwaway culture. Every individual matters, and the individual cultures that are born out of local communities. And the freedom of individuals to create on a larger scale what is a culture, right?
Yeah.
And so you can't run over those. So you have the emphasis on defending the individual and individual cultures so that they don't get run over. So that is a false universalism that he condemns, but then he then comes after the individualists and says, but when that becomes reduced to just basically license, because I'm an individual and no absolute law or absolutes, he hammers that as well.
And that's Catholic, so Catholic.
Yeah.
And all these people who say that this is an anti-Trump letter, said the things about patriotism that the Pope says— Yes. The left wing would be all over. I mean, if he says you're no good to the international community if you don't love your own country, that sounds like Trump to me. Well, that doesn't sound like. Do you see what I'm saying?
It does.
That's the Pope. That's what the Pope says.
See, I think for some of my friends that have already written to me and claiming what you just said, I think when they hear Donald Trump say nationalism and then they hear the Pope going after nationalism, he's going after Trump. But they're using the terms differently.
Yeah.
Donald Trump's idea of nationalism is patriotism.
Right. That's what he means by it.
Means by it. And patriotism is a virtue in Catholic theology, right? And that's what Pope Francis was, as you said, you cannot truly be welcoming to the immigrant if you don't understand your own identity and your own culture, because you don't have anything to offer. There has to be a mutual dialogue with the immigrant. And that's how everyone benefits, because you can listen, because you have security in who you are, as Francis says. You have a security and an identity to where you're not afraid. And that was one of his big issues with the wall. Is you can't have walls that represent insecurity and fear, because that brings about war, that brings about division. And of course, that's certainly not the first principle of why the wall is being built in the United States. But that's a valid point to make, because if that's the basis for your building the wall, it's wrong and it's going to be destructive.
Yeah.
Right? So again, and I have to say this, because I just was blown away at how I talked to you before we went on the air of my fear was, and I often have fears. I had a fear when the Catechism came out. I thought it was going to be a disappointment, because I love the Catechism of the Council of Trent. And then I read every word of the Catechism. And wow,
yeah, right?
It's so much better than the Catechism of Council of Trent. It's not even close, right? Well, I kind of feared he's writing this to the world. Oh, no, Jesus is going to get lost in the shuffle. Boy, was I wrong.
Yeah, it's about Jesus. Yeah.
It is all about Jesus. And I love the way right in the middle of, you know, going after populism, the dangers of populism, going after individualistic liberal approaches, going after, you know, this ism and that ism, right in the middle of it. In paragraph 166, he says, and I quote, "Everything then depends on our ability to see the need for a change of heart." When I read that, I immediately thought of Billy Graham. You know, and every time Billy Graham preached, God bless him, he would always say, you know, things like, America doesn't have a money problem. America doesn't have a this and that problem. America has a heart problem.
Yeah, right.
And needs a transformation of the heart.
It's the first words out of Jesus' mouth in the Gospel of Mark. I mean, repent.
Repent. But that's... here it is. Everything that depends on our ability to see the need for a change of heart. Concupiscence, he says, is the ultimate problem behind everything we're talking about here. Concupiscence. And he says, concupiscence can only be overcome with the help of God. This is a call to repentance, the need of grace. And when you fast forward to the end, beginning especially at section 172 through to the end, he calls the whole world to come to Jesus in the church. And I love that deft quote from his letter to the Universal Patriarch Bartholomew, the Patriarch of Constantinople, in their letter, as we journey toward full communion and dot, 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 dot. That's ultimately, Cy, this is what this letter is all about. Oh, it is a call to the entire world to come to full communion with Jesus Christ in his church.
Yeah. If I may, Tim, the thing you say about stretching that I think sometimes, you know, like, for example, a person like, I'll take myself as an example. You're both an American and a Catholic. As an American, you have certain views about what's wrong. Tax policy, okay, you got defense policy, all the, and what we have, pornography and abortion and all that. And you start to think, well, if we just get these things right, everything will be fine. And what I think the Pope is definitively saying here is that is not true. You winning your political battles not make everything fine. There's a vision of social life that emerges out of the gospel and is embedded in 2,000 years of Catholic teaching, and you need to go back to that.
Yes.
The vision, the Jesus-centered vision of our common life.
Yeah.
And it's big, and it's very challenging, and it's not very helpful to us who are like, hey, we got a pro-life election coming up. We'd like some help on that.
Yeah.
And he's not helping us on that. He's proposing a much bigger vision of what a society that looks like Jesus looks like.
He is, and I love, I have it written here somewhere. I have so many notes, but I loved it when he was talking about left and right and the different isms and their attempts. And he says, in the end, there is no one answer to the question politically. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, right.
There is no, this is it. We've got it and you guys don't, and we're going to crush you until you
realize.
Yes. That's what he's guarding against. He's talking about another very important word that I love. We've talked about before, Cy, that was introduced by our Holy Father, Pope St. Paul VI in 1964 into the documents of Vatican II, is dialogue.
Yeah.
And that is peppered everywhere here.
Right.
He is inviting everyone to dialogue and to understand there are certain absolutes, and he talks about that, that you can come to know through reason, and he emphasizes that through the natural light of reason. You can know, and he uses the example of murder. You don't need a pope or a Bible to tell you murder is wrong, because this is knowable through the pure and natural light of reason. And he says that the whole world is bound to, governments are bound to these principles of natural law. And then he also mentions there that we as Christians believe that God is the only sure foundation, because he is what gives a sure and solid foundation to those laws, even natural law, which is brilliant because, of course, not everyone can come to the truth through the pure natural light of reason, because natural law is difficult to understand and all of that sort of thing. So he calls everyone to, there is an absolute truth that everyone is bound to, and ultimately he gets to God and also the church as the guarantor of that sort of foundation that undergirds everything. So, you know, when you're reading the encyclical, when he gets to everything, the word everything, perk up and focus in on what he's saying, because it becomes very, very important. Everything depends on our understanding. There are certain absolutes that Jesus established a church, and that we need God and his grace, because there is no one answer to all these things politically, but there is one answer when it comes to the most important things, and that is Jesus Christ.
Yeah, right, right. And it's around Jesus that we're brothers and sisters to one another, but he does invoke, I won't remember the imam's name, but there's a—
Oh, yes, yes.
And I imagine people you can be offended by that. I don't know that there's any particular reason to be offended by it. And it's, to me, it's almost in a couple spots, I have to say, seemed a little gimmicky. Like he's using this dialogue to frame really what he wants to make as his argument.
Right, right.
But he is signaling, like, this is a model. Like,
yes,
this dialogue that I have with this imam, this is a model. We have to talk with other people. We can't just say,
oh my goodness,
you're wrong. Oh,
man, Cy, you hit on another really important thing peppered throughout. In paragraph 43 or section 43, he talks about how the digital media is, quote, not capable of uniting humanity. Right?
This was a beautiful section.
Oh,
I loved what he said.
Just
because we're killing ourselves with social media.
We're killing our souls. We are. And he talks about the need of seeing facial expressions and even the perspiration and the blushing on a real person's standing in front of you.
Right.
There's no substitute for real human communication. And in fact, the digital media has, as he says, it's right around there, section 43, where he talks about how we say things to each other that here before we would never dream of saying, but because we're behind the digital veil, we say things incendiary and just demeaning and so forth all the time. And it reduces the conversation to where it's not really a conversation any longer. There's no real person on the other end of your digital attack.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what ends up happening. So, I mean, his emphasis on dialogue is huge. Real human discourse, where we have to sit down and appreciate, listen and appreciate what the other person is saying, you know, rather than just, you know, thinking about what we're going to say before they finish saying what they say. And you really do need face-to-face communication to have real communication like that.
That's where you really sense him as a pastor, too, that he uses very pastoral language. This is one of my favorite lines from the whole thing, and this is at the root of what this section you're talking about. In paragraph 47 starts with this little sentence, "The true wisdom demands an encounter with reality." Because I think what he's saying is, like, reality is other people. It's nature. It's looking at the sun. It's feeling the breeze. And we are cut off from reality as modern people. And if you want to talk about prophetic, it has to be said.
Yes.
You're missing out on reality in the modern world.
Oh, my goodness. There is so much that is prophetic. And could I change gears a little bit? Because I want to talk as well about some of the ways he challenged me, you know, when it came to the wall.
Okay, good. Yeah, thanks, Tim. Yeah.
When it came to the wall, man, I mean, he challenged me, and I've got to realize, hey, you know what? We need to be a voice, those of us who are in favor of the wall for obvious reasons, to be careful, and we need to interject into the conversation. You can't reduce the people on the other side of the wall in the process.
Right.
Well, what about his challenge to we who hold so dear the right of private property ownership, right?
Oh, that's a big one. A lot of people saying the Pope has dropped the ball on his understanding of private property, where I think exactly the opposite is true.
Exactly.
He's on the money. We're off the money on that one.
That's right. And by the way, For those of you watching, listening, it's in section 120 of the encyclical. And by the way, he quotes Pope St. John Paul the Great and his wonderful Laborum Exercens on the dignity of work, where Pope St. John Paul II says, the principle of the common use of created goods is the first principle of the whole ethical and social order. And then down a little bit later, he talks about how that private property on an individual basis is a natural right, but always in a secondary sense. Now, this is Catholic teaching,
that
my
is
friends.
Not communism. Anybody who thinks you don't understand Catholic teaching if you think that's communism.
That's
that
right.
is and beautiful. How can we be brothers and sisters to one another if God didn't give all of this to all of us?
That's right.
We share a common heritage.
That's right. And this principle becomes so important. You know what came to mind when I was reading that? And it just, my heart leapt. You know, because even though I know he's challenging, because I hate, of course, I'm a capitalist, dude. Yes, I am. and capitalism, its core principles are solid.
Have you been reading Trent Horn?
That's right. But with caveats.
Okay.
Because it can quickly be reduced to greed and the lowest common denominator in all sorts of ways that we could talk into. So we need the prophet constantly to be warning us.
Good point.
And I think he is that. But I thought of my trip to India with Steve Ray a few years ago, and I will never forget the abject misery and poverty that I saw. Although, let me qualify that. I saw a lot of joy in the midst of that poverty that was absolutely mind-blowing. But the poverty was so painful. And I remember we were being taken on a tour by our folks. We traveled all over Mumbai, around the city, lots of different parishes, conferences. It was an incredible trip. But I remember seeing, as we're driving, they took us over to see one of the wealthiest men in the world who lives in Mumbai. And he has a house that was, I wish I could remember the exact, it's something like 65 stories high. A house!
Yeah.
And it was the ugliest thing I've ever seen. There was no proportion. It was just this big blob. But 65, I mean, it was like a skyscraper you would see in New York City, at least height-wise.
And that's his house.
His house. And right outside of his house, there's a massive gate. And right outside, there are people starving to death. Right out in front. Wow. Now, if you can look at that and say, well, hey, man, I mean, private property, it's his, you're sick.
Yeah.
All right? That is absolutely, I mean, this is right out of the Gospel of Luke, chapter 16, the rich man and Lazarus, right? You've got dogs licking the sores, right? I mean, that's the gospel right in front of my face here. All right, well, I thought of that when I read this, because what John Paul is saying and what Francis is saying, and by the way, he expands that too, far beyond the individual, also to nations. We have a responsibility. And I will defend the United States. I think we've done some extraordinary things as far as, you know, just in immigration, allowing 1 million immigrants into our country every year. There's never been a country in the history of the world that has ever come
it's
close.
It's like letting a country into your country every year.
Every year. I mean, it is extraordinary. But I'll tell you what, he challenges us anyway, doesn't he?
Yeah,
I mean,
he does.
You know what? You need to go beyond. Yeah. You need to give, and you need to continue to give, and I love that. But here's the point. That the individual and, you know, property rights and such, when it reaches that kind of proportion, and by the way, he expands the conversation as well, and great quote from St. John Chrysostom that you'll also find in the Catechism in, I think it's paragraph 2447 through 2449, that it's the section on the spiritual and corporal works of mercy. But St. John Chrysostom says that if we do not give to the poor, we are robbing them.
Right.
And if we are hoarding when someone else is in need, we are stealing from them, right? Pope Francis is just quoting one of the great fathers of the church in St. John Chrysostom, and he is challenging all of us in a very wealthy United States of America and a very wealthy, Western world. we've got to open up and we've got to wake up. We need to be shook every once in a while. And I believe this encyclical letter does that in a profound way.
Yes, right. And right. And wanting a world where systems work perfectly, or where we have great political victories, or even where justice prevails, is not enough. What he's saying is you'd have to desire a world where we are actually brothers and sisters to one another. That's beyond all these other aspirations, however good they might be.
That's right. And for those who say he's anti-capitalism, that is simply not true. In fact, in, where is that? Section 123, he praises business, calls it a noble vocation.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that. Yeah.
A noble vocation to enter into the business world. But you don't forget about the fact that you're being blessed in order to be a blessing. You're not there in the business world just to accumulate all you can accumulate and maybe throw a few crumbs here or there.
Right.
We are, he calls us back to what you said. We are brothers and sisters. And are we really considering all the way up the ladder, and when we're at the top of the ladder, our brothers and sisters? It's prophetic in that sense.
Right, right. Would you say there's a kind of personalism in it, that it puts the person at the center of everything?
Just absolutely.
Stop forgetting about the person. Whatever you're doing, stop forgetting about the person. That's what matters.
And what's brilliant about it is he recognizes that both right and left, to use the political terms, ends up reducing persons to mere objects.
Right.
They become less than what they are. And his call, it's preference for the poor. This is Catholicism.
It is.
You know, the consideration of the poor and so forth, that I know in my own life, this challenged me to try to do more than I'm doing right now. And I will be forever grateful to Pope Francis for that, because that is a challenge that I need.
Yeah, beautifully said, Tim. All right, so the two main complaints.
Yes.
I actually asked our social media guy this. What are you seeing on social media? What are the two main complaints? The first one was that private property one, as if the Pope is a communist or something. Right. The second one is the death penalty. So I think before we end, we got to talk about death penalty.
Yes.
I think the Pope is driving some people nuts with his death penalty talk. So what is that about? And is that an area, for example, you talk about him requiring something of you, so wanting to stretch your way of thinking. Are you experiencing that?
Yeah, just real quick, with the idea of the secondary aspect of individual property rights, it's a part of natural law, but it's secondary to a greater principle, right, of the common good.
Right.
Well, with regard to the death penalty, why this has stretched me. John Paul is the one who started stretching me.
Me too. Yeah, because he's the one who brought it up. It's like, we were doing fine. We had a perfectly good death penalty. And then he's like, wait a minute. Okay, so but this Pope continues that.
He does, and he's stretching me all the more. And, you know, I've had to realize, because I've read the American Bishop's document, it's brilliant. It's so good, and it's right in so many ways. I mean, just the idea, the one among many that are brought out by the American bishops, it's a fact that we all know. If you're O.J. Simpson, if you have money, you're not going to die. The same guy, O.J. Simpson, if O.J. Simpson was just Pete Smith somewhere, he'd be dead right now, okay? Yeah. I mean, the injustice of it is everywhere. You know, now that's the American bishops dealing with the American situation. But now John Paul is seeing on a worldwide stage, theologically, we have real development in our understanding of the dignity of the human person. We have real abilities today to truly protect the common good by putting away criminals so that they can't harm. And people argue, well, they can still harm people in prison and call hits on people outside. And that's true, and that needs to be spoken to. But I don't think the popes think that trumps what the Holy Spirit is saying to us today. And that is, and by the way, it's not just the death penalty, but it's also war in this document.
Yes, that's a very good point.
Yeah. That Pope Francis is saying, and he says it in no uncertain terms. Now, let's do death penalty first. That given our present circumstances, the church must not, in fact, cannot back away from this position. The death penalty must be eliminated all over the world. Oh my goodness, right?
Yeah.
And you want to know something? I agree with him. I, who used to be the biggest pro-death, pro-death penalty guy in the world, I'm telling you, I don't have any arguments any longer that keeps me from understanding that this is the social teaching of the church. This is social doctrine now, meaning this is the way in which the doctrinal principles, which cannot change, and I want to shout this from the rooftops, and I've said this forever, the death penalty is not intrinsically unjust. The Pope has never said that, never will.
No.
Because the death penalty, you know, we root it Genesis 9:6, right? It's intrinsically just if it's applied in a just manner. Because, of course, the Genesis 9:6 says, "He that sheds blood, his blood must be shed." That is enunciating a term or a statement of justice. This is in fact just, but. As John Paul II said it in Evangelium Vitae, just because you can do something doesn't mean you ought to. And he cited very deftly the situation of Cain, who, if anybody ever did anything worthy of death, it was him. And God says, nope, you don't touch him. So God himself is saying, just because the death penalty is just and can be implemented doesn't mean it ought to be. And we have King David and other situations, right? Jesus himself with the woman caught in adultery. So even though the death penalty is not intrinsically evil, what the church is saying in her social doctrine, that is in the way that we implement this teaching, it ought not to be done today. This is the social doctrine. It has sort of developed from John Paul. Benedict followed in his footsteps in all that they did, both in appealing for mercy for folks who were sentenced to death up until Pope Francis, who has laid it down. And I'll tell you what, folks, you talk about challenging, challenging me, challenging the world. No. And I think one thing we need to do, brother, is to shout it from the rooftops, the distinction between the death penalty and abortion, because I think that the conversation can become distorted if people use this.
Yeah.
You know, to sort of attempt to say that abortion and death penalty are kind of the same thing, right? It's the same thing. So we need to understand that abortion and the killing of innocent human beings is intrinsically evil. The death penalty is not. It's not intrinsically evil, but it's something that the church and her social doctrine is saying must not be carried out in our day and age. Man, is that a challenge to the nations? Can we mention war real quick?
Oh, please do. Yeah.
We're running out of time. Because I thought, once again, in his, and I wrote it down here, basically saying that our principle of, there it is, in section 258, Pope Francis says, the criteria for just war in our tradition, and notice he never even calls into question whether they're true or not. Of course they are.
Yeah.
Catechism, paragraph 2309. And by the way, this is not just war theory. This is just war doctrine. This is a doctrine of the church. But he says that these principles, as true as they are, he says it is difficult nowadays to invoke these principles to justify any war in our day and age, right? And one of the many things he says is, because in today's warfare, its risks will, and notice how he uses the word probably, he says, will probably always be greater than its supposed benefits. He doesn't come out as strongly against war as he does the death penalty, where,
right.
But he says probably difficult to invoke these principles in today's day and age because of the kind of warfare we're talking about, where you can eliminate the whole planet or eliminate whole cities, eliminate whole countries. And that's not just with the nukes. That's just with the new kinds of conventional bombs and such we have, the blockbusters and so forth. And so he says, today, never war, right? With an exclamation point. But when he's laying out these principles, he says difficult, he says probably. He doesn't come down, but I'll tell you what, I think we might have some development on this.
Yeah, and we've seen it. We have seen it. It's not originally, I mean, he quotes John the 23rd.
Yes.
And so you have seen, and certainly Pope John Paul, in many, many cases, said things that were trying to wake us up to the fact that modern warfare might mean that we're in a stage in human development where you have to think in new ways about which things are ethical and which things are not ethical.
That's right. And I wish I have it here somewhere. I couldn't find it, but he does quote good Pope St. John in Pacem in Terris. And I forget the paragraph where Pope John said that war in today's day and age does not make sense. It doesn't have the ability to reconcile the genuine injustices that have occurred among the nations, but it cannot be the instrument of reconciliation because it creates more injustices than it heals. So, right. I mean, there was a real sort of course, we could talk about World War II, and of course, he mentions the injustice of Nagasaki and Hiroshima. He mentions the Shoah. And interesting how, you know, in the midst of all of this beautiful, theologically rich teaching and developing thoughts from previous pontiffs, he also, you know, inserts the injustices of the Shoah, that is the Holocaust, and but in the context of introducing this notion of reconciliation. Yeah. Reconciliation among the nations. And I thought it had so many applications where I see them in our own country with the African American community and such. But he talks about how that we cannot fall in the reconciliation over Nagasaki and Hiroshima and Shoah. That's what he was talking about. It can never be reduced to vengeance. It can never be reduced to punishing people because of the past. We have to reconcile. He says, you don't forget. He says, God forbid, we'll never forget the Shoah or Nagasaki. But we've got to reconcile and move on rather than allowing these things to take us backward and then create new injustices in the name of reconciliation. I thought it was brilliant. He didn't mention the African American community in our country, but it certainly applies.
You can't ever forget. If the project is to forget, you're on the wrong project, but you can be reconciled. And he has great hope in that human beings can be reconciled.
But you can't punish people today for what their forefathers did. Yeah. Right? Because you're white, you might have had, and who cares if only 4% of the population in the United States actually owned slaves? Maybe one of yours did.
No, definitely one of mine did.
Okay.
I can tell you his name.
Well, you need to pay reparations.
I probably should.
No, but you know what, brother? Yeah. That's a grave error.
Yeah.
Because when I think the Pope makes this point. Because when you invoke, you bring in vengeance and punishment in that sense against innocence, you're creating new injustices that are going to take decades and who knows how long to heal as well. So, I mean, to say that this encyclical letter hit a broad spectrum of things is an understatement.
Right.
It was incredibly
ambitious.
Yeah, it
is an understatement. It was. Yeah, sometimes you almost feel like he's having a hard time saying anything because he wants to say everything. Do you know that?
That's right.
And that just may be, the quality of his mind, how his mind works. It's comprehensive. It doesn't admit for a lot of. I don't know that just the one thing and then another thing and another thing. It's hard, but it does when you step back from it. There is a vision of our social life, our communal life, that is not like what it is today. And it's not just a little shaded improvement.
Yes.
And that's, I think, the danger that we have. We get the, you know what? As soon as we overturn Roe versus Wade, then we can go back to being, he's saying, stop it. Yes. That is not, and he uses the COVID-19 as a occasion to talk about this.
Yes.
But, and so we can also be like that. Well, he even says this. You can get in the attitude, well, once we're through with the COVID-19, we can go back to the way we were. And he's saying, don't go back to the way you were.
That's right.
That's too low a vocation for you.
Section 226, the heading, starting anew from the truth, right? Starting anew.
Right, yeah.
From the perspective of truth. He talks about absolute truth as the foundation.
Yeah.
And that's the only foundation we can have. Relativism is a non-starter because you can't build anything.
There's nothing to build.
There's nothing to build on. You have to have truth. And that involves dealing with sins, reconciliation, all of that. We're not sweeping anything under any rugs, but we got to start with truth and then you move forward. That's the only way to move forward. What's happening in our culture today, we are stuck with things in the past bringing about anger and violence. Look in the United States, yeah, and it's happening around the Western world as well. Right. And much of it's just rooted in lies. It's rooted in people stirring the pot of concerning things that aren't even real. They weren't even injustices to start with,
right,
and such. But our Holy Father, I think, in a very hopeful way, in a sense, is saying, well, we don't forget the Shoah. We don't forget these things. But we do have to start anew. And so there's a sense in which we can say even the stuff that's not rooted in truth at all, it's myth, you know, the phony Michael Brown story, right? Hands up, don't shoot. That was obviously a lie, and it's still being
used. Almost everything that's said about Christopher Columbus.
Yes. And
that's not who he was.
That's right. And on and on and on. There's a sense in which we can invite everybody to the table, and let's consider the truth. The truth. And maybe, you know, we can get into the truth of Christopher Columbus. We can get into the truth of all sorts of particulars. But I think the truth the Holy Father is moving toward is the truth of Jesus Christ,
yeah,
and the transforming power of the gospel that can alone change the hearts, that can alone deal with the concupiscence that's at the core of all of this. And that's the genius of our Holy Father. I saw it in Laudato Si. And dealing with climate and all the other things, and you know, I'm a guy who doesn't believe that humans have much or anything to do with climate change. Maybe a minimal amount, but you know what? When I read that, it didn't matter because ultimately he's talking about perennial principles of stewardship.
Right.
We need
of
to
our
take
common home.
Whether you believe that or not doesn't matter because these principles are true. And the fact is that this whole system of ours has led to the throwaway culture. And that's what he was really going after in Laudato Si, the throwaway culture that sees nothing as important except me, my desires, my wants. And if a baby comes along, I'm going to throw him away. I'm going to throw this away and so forth. Well, here, I think I'm one who pretty much loves everything Francis has written. I mean, the actual magisterial stuff I love. But this one, I think, is the most profound for me because he's really at the core. Not that Laudato didn't have, of course, Jesus was at the core of that here, but this is so profound, brother, the way he's inviting everybody. He mentions atheists, agnostics, everybody, and he's inviting everybody to the ultimate truth.
Yeah, and I don't let whatever suspicions or bitterness you have about Francis, because many people do, allow you to miss the really thrilling parts of this. A full-throated invitation to a Catholic view of what our shared common life can be.
Amen. Amen. And all the caveats, please, folks, listen to the caveats of our Holy Father. Try to put aside biases and listen as if you're listening to a prophet, because you are.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks very much.
All right.
Fratelli tutti. Well, it's fun to say. Anyways, I hope you've enjoyed this kind of look at Fratelli Tutti, and maybe take an opportunity to read it, study it a little bit, and find the treasures for yourself that are there. Hey, we'd love to hear from you. Our website, our email address, focus@catholic.com. People have been sending us ideas, some really good ideas for future episodes. Maybe you've got a thought, or maybe you'd like to comment on this or other episodes. focus@catholic.com. If you wouldn't mind supporting us financially, you can do so at givecatholic.com. We do need your support. It costs money to do this, and we like doing it. We hope it's helpful. If you find it helpful, givecatholic.com is where you can support us. If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to like and subscribe. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. I'm sorry I pointed at you like that. I didn't mean to point at you like that. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Focused.